Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
All right, welcome back to Primetime. You made it back in time.
Really?
There you go.
Slid. My age, a man respects his kidneys.
Walk right in front of the camera, at least. It is prime time. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan. Relax, McCowan will be back on Monday.
No hate mail.
Joined by Dave Perkins. No hate mail yet?
Not yet.
It's plenty of time. We got to get you on Twitter.
No.
You should just take...
I would get arrested.
Just take my Twitter account.
I would say so much stupid stuff that would get me in so much trouble. I don't need any more aggravation than what I get.
Just take over my Twitter account. Dan Shulman will join us in a few minutes. Of course, the news today, Dan Shulman will be broadcasting a minimum of 30 games per year for the next 2 years. He'll also be involved in our Blue Jays coverage online and on radio as well. And it's perfect timing to have Dan Shulman in here because the big one, Dave Perkins, the big one, the National League and American League Most Valuable Player Awards are being doled out today. The American League Most Valuable Player Award, which the finalists are Mike Trout, Lorenzo Cain, and Josh Donaldson of the Blue Jays. That should be announced sometime after 6:30. The National League MVP Award should be in about another 10 to 15 minutes.
Do you think there's anyone in the free world who thinks Lorenzo Cain will win this?
No.
I don't. I mean, he's a hell of a ball player. Nope. Good for him. It's like being the second man to invent the telephone here. at that point.
Wait, I had it first. Yeah. I had the telephone first. I think that might be the case. The National League should be a slam dunk.
I think it's Harper, and I think it's going to be very, very close between the other two, and either one could be, wouldn't surprise me.
Well, Dave, I made the point that I think as long as he doesn't suffer catastrophic injury, I just think Mike Trout is going to be the prohibitive favorite.
For about 15 years.
And indeed, Bryce Harper maybe too.
This will be 4 years for Trout where he's either first or second.
Yeah.
Correct? So.
Yeah. And he is a remarkable player too.
He's a hell of a player. And there's no shame in losing to him. And it would be a real feather to beat him. And, you know, I don't know what considers his prime. Perhaps he hasn't even reached it yet. But there's been questionable MVP guys throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
And no one ever seems to remember who finished second.
Right.
But, boy, once you got your name in that trophy, it's pretty special.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's safe to say that there will be no questionable winners this year. By the way, Joey Votto is also one of the finalists.
Yep.
For the National League MVP Award. You must have voted in a fair number of these things.
I voted in a few of them over the years. The Baseball Writers Association of America, every year each chapter gets two votes in mm-hmm. each category. So, you know, the people who say, and I can remember the year I voted Cy Young maybe, and it was down to Henken and Pettit. And people were saying, you'll never beat a guy from New York because there's 500 papers in New York and all those New York writers. And they used to say, look, that's not how it works. You get two voters from each city.
Yeah.
The relative sizes of the media markets is irrelevant. You get two experienced voters. And I've always found the BBWA guys to be extremely conscientious. You would agree with that. I mean, you voted
in
the
absolutely.
Past. I voted in the past.
Absolutely. You know. I think especially for the MVP award.
Yeah.
I think once guys started to talk openly about how they voted and started to put their votes out
Correct.
There, that became even more of a case.
Yeah, you needed to defend your vote. Yeah. I always made it a habit of saying, who I voted for, whether it was Rookie of the Year, Manager mm-hmm. of the Year, Cy Young, or MVP.
Yeah. And I can remember one year in Montreal, I voted for Greg Maddux for Most Valuable Player. It was the year, I believe, there were about six of us voted Greg Maddux. That was the year he was just unconscious. And that was a bit of a crap storm because, of course, pitchers have their own award. Right.
But so what? So, award, you know, goaltenders have their own award in hockey, and they still win Hart trophies. So.
Yeah, and, boy, the way the game's gone now, I mean, you can really make a case that, you know, the pitcher should be part of the MVP conversation. I'm frankly kind of surprised, and no disrespect to Joey Votto or Paul Goldschmidt, the other finalists. I'm actually really surprised that Zach Greinke or Clayton Kershaw didn't, that one of the two of those guys weren't amongst the finalists.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a clause about contribution to your team, same as in the Hall of Fame vote. Mm-hmm. As I might add, there's a clause that specifies character, contribution to team, as well as statistics and all those things, and so many people who equate baseball with doing their taxes think it's strictly about numbers and only numbers matter, and you can only go by whatever number they choose to enjoy more than others.
And I'm going to give you credit, by the way. I know I've done this about four times, but I remember hosting this show early in the year, and we were talking about Josh Donaldson, and you made the point that he might be the best player the Blue Jays have had, the best all-around player since Roberto Alomar.
He's got a long way to go.
Sure,
You know, Carlos Delgado had a hell of a Blue Jay career. Alomar had a fantastic 5 years. Dave Steeb had a wonderful career. Halliday had a wonderful career.
Tony Fernandez had
several, you know, runs at being a great Blue Jay. So, I mean, the franchise has had a lot. The George Bell won the only MVP within the franchise's history, as we know. They've won four Cy Youngs.
Mm-hmm.
Clemens won two, Henkin won one, Halliday won one. Steve should have won a couple.
Right.
So, you know, they've got a whack of Cy Youngs. They've won Rookies of the Year.
Eric Hinsky.
Back to Alfredo Griffin. Shared it with John Castillo, I believe.
Yeah.
In 85, 6, 7, one of the... Yeah. It all blurs at this point, but it's there.
Yeah.
And my God, we're to be joined by greatness.
There he is here.
Greatness has arrived.
We promised you Dan Shulman. We've delivered Dan Shulman.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Dave.
Danny, how are you?
Welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome back. Thank you. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well.
This is a little different than I remember the studio back on Holly Street all those years ago.
Yeah. I was going to say this has kind of got the mothership feel to it.
And we're on TV too, right, I gather? Yes. There we are.
We're
on
TV too.
They're going to build McCowan's Wine Bar over there.
Yeah, we'll have the little seating area as well. Welcome back, man.
Thank you.
Good news today.
It's been a fun day. I won't lie. It's a, you know, anybody who doesn't enjoy hearing welcome back or welcome home isn't human, I guess. And it's been really fun. I always kind of sentimentally wanted to get back and do Blue Jays games again, and just kind of things have come together both on the professional and the personal side that make it possible. And I want to thank everybody at Rogers and Sportsnet, you know, for, you know, we had to work. Got to work around my ESPN schedule and all that kind of stuff, and they were great, and everybody was flexible on both sides. So it's about 30 games a year is the number we're kind of picking around right now, but it's going to be fun.
When did I don't have to give away any state secrets here, but when did you start to think that it might be a reality that you might be coming back here?
Actually, so you see, where's the young man? You saw my son in there in the control. There is the young man right there. So he's a baseball player, and I unfortunately for him, I was his coach the last 7 years. So that chewed up my summer. Anybody who's coached rep baseball knows what that does to your summer, and it's great. I mean, I loved it. And he has decided to keyboards are jumping out at me here. He has decided to move on to different things in the summertime. So that kind of freed up my summer. And I was looking for something to do. And although I'm sometimes characterized as the busiest man in sports TV, don't tell anybody, but for most of the summer, I do one game a week. I do the Sunday night game.
But it just seems.
Yeah, I know.
It seems as if you're busy.
Yeah, and I am. And, I'm doing college basketball like crazy, too, and I do playoff radio and all that, and I'm busy enough. But you know what? I'm looking for something to do a little bit in the summer, and my dad's a huge fan, and won't it be fun for him to come back? And my bet is that, you know, 15, 20 years from now, that guy is going to be calling the games. He wants to do it. And so, I want to come back. I want to do it for me. I want to do it for him. I want to do it for my dad. I just want to do it because it's fun. I mean, this is what I do. I do games, and I got a little taste of it in the playoffs on ESPN Radio. I did game 5 of the Texas series, and then I did the whole Toronto-Kansas City series. And, you know, I'm listen, I'm born here, I'm raised here, and it's fun to be back here.
And so. The other part of it is that it's not going to be a bad team for a couple of years. It's going to be a fun team to look
at. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. You know, they still need some pitchers. I mean, they need, let's assume Price is not back, and let's assume Burley is not back. I think they need at least two pitchers who are not currently on, in the organization right now. I'll assume Sanchez is moving to the rotation. If he does, I still think they need another starting pitcher after that.
Agreed.
And that leaves a hole in the bullpen.
Right.
And that's if Mark Lowe is back. You know, they might need two or three plus Mark Lowe in the bullpen. They should have a little bit of money to spend, I would imagine, but I don't think it's all free agents. I think there might be a trade to bring some.
They just gave some of it to you, probably. They don't have as much as they should.
No, keep
that in mind when Steve Delabar comes out in the eighth inning. Look up to the broadcast.
No, they got the friends and family rate.
What was it like for you calling playoff games here, and seeing the Blue Jays, seeing the way the country reacted to this team?
Well, that was the most amazing thing to me. And again, we've all spent our lives here. So to see the reaction of the fans, it wasn't just, hey, the Blue Jays are good this year. It was, they haven't been good in 22 years. And I'm afraid to let myself, you know, think they're going to be good again. And the Raptors never get out of the first round. And the Leafs are the Leafs. Like, to me, and maybe I'm wrong, to me, that was all wrapped up in the moment when Bautista hit the home run. And they, you know, the conspiracy theorists, and I'm not among them, they don't want us in the World Series. Oh, that call went, you know, but that, whether we agree with it or not, I don't think you guys do, but a lot of people feel that way. Mm-hmm. And to me, all of that was wrapped up in the moment when Bautista hit the home run. I've never been in a ballpark where I've seen, or an arena, where I've seen a release of emotion and a release of energy that like that one that happened in that moment. It was incredible. It was really fun to call the games. I mean, again, if it had been any hitter on any team in any ballpark, that would have been an incredible moment. But I'd be lying if I said to you it wasn't a little extra fun because it was here.
So. Why don't we play that call right now? I think we have the call of that that home run call.
The 1-1. Bautista drives it deep left field. Gone! The Blue Jays dugout has erupted as they greet Bautista at the edge of the track. Suddenly it is 6-3 for Toronto.
You'll be hearing more of that, hopefully.
That's all I got right there. That's it. But that was
enough, wasn't it?
It was fun. I mean, again, you knew as soon as it came off his bat, it was gone. Mm-hmm. So, and it was crazy. The top and bottom of the seventh inning of Game 5 of the Division Series is the craziest inning of baseball I've ever seen. And you know, I was lucky enough to be at the 2011 World Series, the first one I called when St. Louis played Texas, and Texas is a strike away, not once, but twice in the same game, and they don't win it.
Nelson Cruz happened.
Yeah, go over Nelson, the freeze triple over Cruz's glove, and then they're down two runs in the 10th. They score two in the 10th to tie it, and then freeze homers in the 11th. That was insane. But the top and bottom of the seventh inning of this game, I think, was the craziest I've ever seen.
You know, I had a chance to talk to Buck Martinez before. It was just before the start of the playoffs, and I was asking Buck about the difference, the different feel around this team, because I you know, then 92, 93 is a long time ago. And Buck made the point that he thought, especially in this stadium, he said it's a younger crowd, there's a different vibe. It's not, he didn't use the word it's not as corporate, but that's essentially what he was saying, is it's, you almost got the sense there were more fans at these games now. And maybe, you know, the noise probably reflected that. Did you see that as well?
It's not as corporate as it used to be.
Okay, there you go. Right.
I don't think it's even close. Also, I think there are two differences. One is 92 and 93 were the culmination of a good 8-9 years of baseball. Right. It was a gradual build. Hey, the team's good. Now we expect them to be good. Now they're better. Now we want more. It was this fell out of, this was like a piano falling out of the sky on July the 31st, and holy cow, look what's happening here. So I think there was more of a kind of a Mardi Gras New Year's Eve vibe because it was so unexpected. There is no question that the crowd was, in my opinion, is much younger now than it was back then. I've done an event here in Toronto, and I don't know if you guys have done it, Pitch Talks. I am amazed at how young the crowd is there, and I am thrilled at how young the crowd is there, because everybody tells you that baseball skews, and it does, skews older demographically. Sure. And I think it's great that, 18 to 25-year-olds are going down to the Rogers Center and buying tickets on the day of a game in August and just sitting up in the 500 level to watch baseball. You know, when I was 18, not every game was on television, too. Mm-hmm. You had more of a reason to go down to the ballpark. I think it's great that people are going down to the ballpark, even though every game is obviously televised nationally. And, you know, a young crowd, I think an older fan is likely more likely to stay with the team even if there are some bumps in the road next right. year. The young can come and go a little bit what's next? So I think it's really important for the team to get out of the gate well next season.
I think the biggest difference, alluding to this young crowd, is that there are 250 to 300,000 people who live in the condo forests, 10-minute walk from the Rogers Center.
Right.
Those condos didn't exist in 92-93. And these people can walk to the ballpark, younger for the most mm-hmm. part, and they can walk to the ballpark and join in to something that's happening. It wasn't like that at all in 92-93.
No, it's a whole different scene downtown than it was in 92 totally. And 93. And I think they've done a good job in the last few years of changing some of the things at the ballpark to make the fan experience a little bit better, too. You can't do everything at the Rogers Center that you can do at Wrigley Field or you know, AT&T mm-hmm. or anything. You just can't, and we all get that. But I think they've done a good job trying to improve some things for the fans, and I think more is coming. I think that'll be obviously on the list, on Mark Shapiro's list. So and you know what? It's affordable, too. I mean, the gap between a baseball ticket and a hockey or basketball ticket is way larger now than mm-hmm. it was a generation ago. And, you know, it's not a 20-year-old kid should be able to buy a ticket and go to see a baseball right. game, and they can. And I think it's absolutely great. It's baseball's hard in an ADD. I've got three devices going at once generation. Mm-hmm. You know, we all, even if they don't know that, we know, you know, right. we get yeah. that. And, but I think it wasn't just the winning. I mean, Donaldson, Bautista, you know, Russell Martin. I mean, the kinds of people that they have are very endearing to home fans right now. I think they mm-hmm. brought in, you know, Donaldson, you guys have probably talked about yeah. this a million times. They brought in character. They brought in grit. They brought in toughness. They brought in winners. And I think people, even if they can't, you know, quantify that, I think people love that.
They may have also brought in the only player I've ever run into who doesn't complain about playing an artificial turf. And that was the point I made about Donaldson. I had an interview with him early in the year, and he said, you know, I kind of figured this place was going to be great to hit in. But he said, I can make barehanded catches all the time now because of the turf. And it was interesting. I said, so you like the turf? He goes, yeah, kind of. It's growing up.
Well, it's so funny because, you know, the three of us walked around on the old turf.
Yeah.
I mean, the old turf, you could see why people didn't like playing on it.
Oh, God, your feet would get sore just standing right. on it during batting practice.
But if you closed your eyes and walked around on this and walked around on real grass, you'd probably be able to feel the difference. I don't think mm-hmm. the difference is as big sometimes as it's made out to be, except it is in the minds of some. If a player thinks it's a big deal, it's a big deal, whether he's right
and
or
it's,
wrong.
And it's like all the other aspects of playing in Toronto, the same thing. If you let the customs bother you, if you let the taxes bother you,
yeah.
But if you just say, well, that's for the accountant to figure out, and this is just something that we do as a team, and we're okay, you know, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
It's only an obstacle if you make it one.
Right, but I think the team, and I think you guys are closer to it right now than I am, but I think the team understands there are certain things they have to do better than other teams to attract people here. And that's it is what it is. You can't change that. You may as well not fight it. You may as well do it. And I think they're doing a good job of that. And I mean, there's nothing not to like about the city. And if they get a couple of pitchers, I think the Red Sox will be better. I think the Yankees will be okay. The Orioles don't look like they're going to be very good. It's so early in the winter, it's hard to speculate. The Red Sox are the team that I would look at the most if I were a Blue Jays fan. But I still think the Blue Jays right now, if they make a couple of good moves, probably go into next year as the favorite.
You know, we often ask players when they come back, we'll say, all right, how are you different as a player now compared to when you left here? How are you different as a broadcaster now compared to when you left
here? I mean, I think people know this, but I only left here professionally. I mean, I've always lived here.
Yes,
I've never moved.
Yes.
Yes, as a broadcaster, it's a good question. I mean, Buck was a huge part of this. Buck taught me so much when I was a young broadcaster. You know, we just tried to make the game sound like two guys sitting at a bar watching a baseball game. And that's exactly what I've tried to do every baseball game since. It's not as easy to do that in basketball because of the intensity and the pace of basketball. But I think I look at television like I do the sport. It's a team sport. And my teammates are my analyst or analysts and the producer and the director and the graphics people. We're all in this together. It's not about me or you or you or you. It's about the game. And it's our job to follow the game and tell the story and entertain a little bit here and there. And I think I've just gotten to the point where I'm just, it's like a, you know, it's like a comfortable old pair of jeans. I mean, I know what I'm trying to do. I don't always do it, but at least I know what I'm trying to do. And hopefully more often than not, I do it.
You know what? You talked about basketball. And the thing that has kind of amazed me is that they're two different sports. And you've been able to balance. You have a style that lends itself well to both sports. And that can be hard.
Yeah.
Did you consciously try to have a little different style with basketball compared to baseball? Or did you just let the game kind of?
I let the game. I think I'm just trying to keep up with the game. But I know what you're saying. I mean, basketball is, you call basketball differently than you call baseball. I mean that baseball call that you played for the Bautista, that's yelling and screaming right there. So and there's a little bit of that in basketball too. I think I could have just as easily fallen into hockey or football, I suppose. But if I had to pick the two sports that I liked the most when I was in my early to mid 20s, it was basketball and baseball. And probably that continues still to this day. Baseball is more conversational. Basketball is a little more adrenaline. So you do have to be conscious of that in the back of your mind. And I have some week, like the opening day weekend of baseball on Saturday and Monday, I do the Final Four for ESPN International. CBS has the right, so ESPN doesn't have it, but they have it for the rest of the English speaking world. So on Saturday, I do the two semifinals. Then on Sunday, I fly to wherever our opening baseball game is. And then on Monday, I come back for the final. And the point is not the flights. The point is basketball to baseball to basketball on consecutive days. And sometimes I feel when I go from baseball to basketball, it's like I'm kind of walking on a treadmill. And then without me noticing, somebody pushes like the speed up button. And now, holy cow, I got to get going here. So there's a little bit of an adjustment from sport to sport. But again, none of us are as young as we used to be, and we've all been at this a long time. So I think by now I'm pretty comfortable with the changeover.
Should mention, by the way, that Bryce Harper's just been named National League Most Valuable Player. Unanimous pick.
You're kidding.
Unanimous pick.
Good for him. Congratulations.
What do you think happens in the AL MVP tonight?
I think Donaldson wins it in a close one. And I think if the Angels had made the playoffs or the Blue Jays hadn't, I think Trout would win it. But we all come from different, you know, it's all, for some people, it's all about, well, what's your war and what's your this? And I get and respect everybody's point of view on this. And I don't just look at one number. But I think, you know, if I said to you guys, pick a player to start a team, you're going to pick Trout before you pick Donaldson.
Of course.
But who was the most valuable player to this team this year? I think it was Josh Donaldson, but I think they'll get all 30 first place votes before them, but between them, I don't think anybody else gets a vote. But it wouldn't surprise me if it's a 16-14, and if the points are like 340, 320, or whatever they happen to turn out to be. So,
yeah, David made the point. We talked about it earlier in the show, and I keep crediting you this, but very early in the year, and I want to say it was May, the end of May, we talked about Donaldson, and Perk made the point that he thought he might be.
Potentially.
You were very careful. You didn't come out and make a definitive statement, but you said potentially you could see this guy being the best all-around Blue Jay since Alomar. Do you think he's that good?
Yeah, if you put all-around in there. If you talk about five-tool players, the sixth tool are the intangibles, the grit and the toughness and the not giving up that fifth at bat and the day game after the night game, and he's off the charts in all of that stuff. Yeah. He hit for a good average. He's got great power. He's far above average defensively. He's a good base runner. I think it's true. And I wonder, I don't know if it's going to happen, but isn't now the time for the 5-year, $110 million deal? Or, you know, and I'm sure you guys have talked about that a lot. Yeah. Like, take it off the table and just get that done. I don't think there's any question he's got a chance to be what Perky said.
And take him to that age 33.
Right.
Age 34 kind of area where then somebody else is going to need to make a call then.
You know what, though? I mean, he's an older guy. I mean, he's almost
29, right?
Yeah.
He's 29 now. Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to be buying out, and we talked about this, you're going to be buying out, what, 2 more years before he becomes a free agent? 3 more years before he becomes a free agent? You're getting into, you're almost getting into Vernon Wells territory, 6 years, 126.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, Encarnacion and Bautista are the age now that Donaldson would be at the end of this deal if they signed it to him. And so for every Wells, there's a Bautista. And you know, I get it's not my money I'm throwing
and
around.
Decisions are coming on everybody.
Right. So, yeah. And if Bautista and Encarnacion or even one of them are gone after next year, to me, what the team becomes is Donaldson and Martin. And young pitching, which isn't as plentiful as it was before the trades. So, you know, Tulowitzki's in that mix as well, if he can stay healthy. But I think every Blue Jay fan would say, sign me up if the Blue Jays could lock him up to a long-term deal right now.
I have to ask Danny an off-the-wall question.
Yeah, yeah.
Who does the best Vital impression?
Oh,
Vital.
It's not me. No, it's not me. So for people who don't know, Dick Vital is who I work with in college basketball, and I think most people know who he is. So I've got good content, but I can't do the voice that well. And most of my good content cannot be said on a family show.
But everybody does it. Everybody does a Dick Vital.
Everybody does a Dickie V.
There has to have been a great one you've run across.
I don't know who it would be, to be honest with you. But literally everybody does it.
Correct.
Because he provides so much material. But he's a wonderful guy. I just did a game with him in Chicago a couple of nights ago. We did the Kansas-Michigan State game. He's 76 years old.
Wow.
76 years old. He is in 12 different halls of fame. Including the Naismith Hall of Fame.
Sure.
He's been a contributor on every level. And if you had to pick one person most responsible for the popularity of college basketball,
no question.
He's in the conversation.
Yes, right.
You can't throw it out just because, you know, he didn't play the game at a high level or whatever. He got fired from the Detroit. He was the head coach of the Detroit Pistons, which a lot of people don't know. He got fired, I think, a week or two before ESPN was born. And as he says, it's the best thing that ever happened to him. A guy called him a couple of weeks later and said, hey, do you want to do a game? I think it was DePaul Northwestern or something like that. Mm-hmm. And literally a star is born. And he's, I guess the easiest comparison for Canadians who don't know who he is would be Don Cherry, but it's not really a great comparison. But it's a guy with a ton of personality, a ton of energy, and just an unbelievable passion for his sport. And both Don and Dick are like that.
And an opinion that shapes trends.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We're going to take a break. We are awaiting the announcement of the American League MVP, Josh Donaldson, one of the finalists. You'll stick around for that, will you?
Yes, I will.
Perfect. It's prime time. On the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
All right, welcome back to Primetime. Jeff Blair, Dave Perkins, very pleased to be joined by Dan Shulman. As you know the news by now, Dan Shulman will be doing a minimum of 30 Blue Jays games each of the next 2 years. He'll also be involved in our baseball coverage online and on the radio side as well. And we talked just before the break, and we will keep you informed, by the way, as to the AL MVP award. We will go live to the MLB Network studios in New York. It's a caucus.
Secaucus, New Jersey.
Secaucus, New Jersey, for the announcement. But you heard us talk a little bit before the break. Of course, you know, Dan also calls NCAA basketball. You had a chance to call Jamal Murray's game the other night. And other than the fact that there looked like a couple of times where John Calipari was wanted to grab him by the neck, he's awfully good, isn't he?
He's phenomenal. I think, and at some point, he knows the difference between a good shot and a not good shot, but he'll take a couple bad shots a game. But other than that, I think he's a remarkable talent. I'm not sure we're going to see him as good as he can be at Kentucky this year, because they have a great point guard, Tyler Ulis, who's a 5'9", little jitterbug guy, great player. So sometimes Murray's the point guard, sometimes he's the two guard. More and more teams are not defining their players that way anymore. They're just saying, hey, you're a guard or you're a player, go do. But I think Murray will be a great college player. I think he's a lottery pick without question, maybe a top five pick. But I think he's going to be even better in the NBA than we'll see in his 1 year in college, and it will be 1 year in college. I think he's got a chance to be, you know, a rookie of the year and then all-star for years and years and years. What he did at the Pan Am Games was remarkable. 18 years of age, never having played a minute of even college basketball, a kid out of high school, to go play against rough and tough 25- to 30-year-old international players who are physically and mentally trying to bully him on the court. He just doesn't care. He's got an old man's game. He's got a great handle. He made an incredible play in that game. He's a good shooter. I think of him more as a scorer than a shooter, but he's a good shooter. He's got good size. He's 6'4 and a half. And, mm-hmm. and I think somebody in the NBA, if they're smart, is going to draft him and say, here's the ball. Go do and see what you can do.
And the way the NBA is going now, that's, I mean, he's almost a perfect type of player because it's
third league.
Yeah, it's no longer you know, the 7 foot five, the 7 foot five league.
Yeah.
When did you start noticing? And again, for people who don't know, Dan has maintained his residence year round in Toronto. But when did you first start noticing when you were doing college basketball that there were an awful lot of kids from Canada that you were starting to hear about or actually call games where they were playing?
It was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, when Tristan Thompson and Corey Joseph went to Texas, when they went together, I think that was the beginning of it. And you know, whether it's Vince Carter or the Raptors in general or Steve Nash or a combination of those things, you know, whatever the reasons are, I mean, obviously they've had an impact on it. But, you know, I well remember a time where the best Canadian players in college were playing at St. Bonaventure and Niagara and Canisius. Right. Mm-hmm. No disrespect to those programs or those kids, but now it's just at a whole other level. And the facilities and the coaching and the travel budgets and the tournaments and the AAU circuit and everything is just in a whole other league. I mean, Canada's got the second, other than the United States, there are more Canadian players in the NBA than any other country. They would have laughed you out of the booth if you said that 15 years ago. So I would say it's about 4 or 5 years ago, and it came quickly. You know, Nick Stauskas showed up as an under-recruited guy at Michigan and won Big Ten Player of the Year as a sophomore and then was a lottery pick. It's nuts what's going on right now, and I don't think it's going to slow down. I think this is the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future.
It would certainly have helped if they had made the Olympics. I mean, that was a huge step backwards.
Yeah, and they still have a chance, but mm-hmm. it's a long shot. Yeah. They're going to play on the road in a 16 tournament, and they're going to have to win it. And I was shocked they didn't beat Venezuela in that game. I mean, Venezuela deserves all the credit in the world. And what if a couple guys were sick and a couple guys I thought played a little bit tentative and nervous in that game? But I think you're right, Dave, though. I am worried as a Canadian that the momentum they had, and they had a ton of momentum, that it's the screeching halt sound right now. And you know, are the best 12 players going to want to give up another summer for a long shot chance to make the Olympics? And I'm not sure they are. Now, I think they can still do well, even if they don't have all 12. You know, get me some 27 to 29-year-old role player character guys to fill in the gaps and to go out there and throw a forearm if you have to throw a forearm or something like that, because FIBA ball is so different. But you do need some of your best talent there if you're going to have a chance.
People really do underestimate how different international basketball is.
Yes, absolutely. It's I think it's not only is it more physical, it's almost like psychological warfare out there. It really is. I mean, the working the refs and the demonstrative nature of the game and I mean, you're competing against guys from different cultures who bring different traditions to the game. And when Murray played, like Argentina's got two great guards that played in the Pan Am games. And they made a point of, we're going to try to mess with Jamal Murray. We're going to see what the kid has. And the kid did great. I mean, he didn't back down. He didn't fight back, but it was like a, you know, brushing something off his shoulder. But there's a real different, the game is called differently. What's a foul here is not necessarily a foul there, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And you have to learn that. The rules are a little bit different. Tipping the ball up above the cylinder, that sort of thing. You need guys with international experience. It's not just, you know, it's almost like the way Canada would put together hockey teams way, way back when. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go get 4 number one centers and 4 number one right wingers and 4 number one left wingers and 6 offensive defensemen. That doesn't work.
Right.
You got to get guys who are going to do the dirty stuff.
And get Bob Gainey on the team.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. Right. Yeah. Exactly right.
I mean, I think for me, where it kind of I started to really pay attention to it was when, because I watched a lot of the NBA, but when I saw the impact that a guy like Garbajosa had on the Raptors, mm-hmm. even when he was here, just kind of some of the sort of black arts of basketball.
Exactly right.
How to work.
Yeah.
How to poke the official, to get under people's skins, how to frustrate them. So now that, and again, we are awaiting the announcement of the American League Most Valuable Player Award, Josh Donaldson of the Blue Jays, one of the finalists. Just to bring it back to baseball a little bit, have you had many dealings with Mark Shapiro in the past?
Yeah, a few.
I mean, as a broadcaster, I'm sure you would have spoken to him.
Yes. And I want to say this about Mark Shapiro, and I made up a word on the morning show today, and I'm going to use it again. I didn't intend to make it up, but I think Mark Shapiro has been over-villainized in this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really unfortunate, and it's not a good thing for the Blue Jays in any way that they couldn't have both of these guys. They would have been best off with both of these guys. For whatever reason, whoever side you're on, it didn't work. But I don't think putting that much of a black hat on Mark Shapiro is fair. He took a job he was offered. Mm-hmm. He took a job he was offered, a better job than a job he felt was better than the one he had. Every single one of us would have done the same.
And he chose not to give back what had been offered, and you can't blame him for
right.
that.
Well, it's just so many people I spoke to who know both of them, both Alex and Mark, they've all said the same thing.
I like both of
them.
I have
no idea how it didn't work out.
Yeah, I like both of them a lot, and I think they're both really good baseball men, for what it matters, what mm-hmm. I think. But and I don't know how you guys feel specifically. I think it was not a good day for the Toronto Blue Jays, but I don't think that should define whatever becomes of Mark Shapiro's tenure with the Blue Jays. I hope Alex Anthopoulos gets a great job somewhere. And I wish Alex Anthopoulos were still with the Blue mm-hmm. Jays. I mean, again, a guy who did a great job this year and made the trades, and I think it means something. And a Canadian, not a local, but a right. Canadian, a guy who moved here and embraced the city, obviously. And I think it's a shame that it didn't work out. But yes, I do know Mark Shapiro. I think Mark Shapiro has some different ideas than Alex Anthopoulos. They're two different people. There will be changes. You can't bring in a new boss, and even some of the things that haven't happened yet are still going to happen, and how they play, how they do on the field, and will dictate that to a certain extent. But, you know, he's coming from Cleveland. He's got a strong like of the analytics and that sort of thing, which Alex did as well, mm-hmm. maybe to his detriment until this year by his own admission.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I think when you come from Cleveland, you really prize those prospects and those young players because you've got a shoestring budget. And I think there will be a big emphasis on the farm system.
Well, it's simple. If they don't win, this guy's going to be – there won't be over-villainizing of him. It'll be legit. I mean, if they don't win, he will pay the price.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would argue it depends. If they don't win with basically the same team, you know.
You got to win, period.
I don't know.
You know,
this coming year,
it's,
you mean?
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they can't take a step backwards right now.
No.
It'll look exactly like it, whether it's him or not.
Right.
It'll look like him.
He only
has one card to play, and that's the manager's card.
Yeah. I think if they have a bad season, however you define a bad season, then I think you could see major shakeups after next season.
Yeah.
Bautista's up, Encarnacion's up.
Sure.
Maybe they try to get younger then. But I think, you know, and this is where Anthopoulos to me had an advantage on Shapiro because he's Canadian and he's been here and he'd lived here for a number of years. I think he understood the psychology of the fan, the right. local fan mm-hmm. here better, just as Mark would have understood it in Cleveland better than we could have. Them doing well, it meant more than just doing well, if that makes sense. And
right.
I don't know how to say it any smarter
exactly
than that.
Right.
It really meant something to people here. And I think they've got to give it one more full go round to see if they can do it next year.
As we await the announcement of the AL MVP award, where do you think David Price ends up?
My first guess is Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
They're a contending team. I think Price wants to play in the National League, all things being equal. Although,
sure.
Joe Maddon, that's an obvious one. They've got the money. It's a pretty cool spot to play. The Dodgers are going to get somebody. I don't know who it's going to be. And his old GM, Andrew Friedman, is now the president mm-hmm. out in L.A. So the first two I think about are the Cubs and the Dodgers. I know if I were a 30-year-old pitcher, I would look at National League teams hard.
No question.
Because soon I'm going to be a 36-year-old pitcher.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's one less batter that I have to get out. And for people in Toronto, it's not about, I thought he liked it. It's not about that. Somebody's going to match. The Blue Jays aren't going to make the biggest offer. They might make a really sincere big offer, but I think somebody else will top it. And I think he's either a Cub or a Dodger in 2016.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, David Price is the type of guy, and I know that fans looked at this and they said the same thing you just said, about how much he liked Toronto. Mark Topkin told me David Price is the type of guy that he'd be happy pitching wherever. He's one of those people who sort of brings his happiness with him.
Yeah.
He's happy in any environment,
yeah.
and he adapts to whatever environment he's in. And that's just the way he's wired.
But he doesn't strike me as a guy who just wants the biggest check he can get, even if it's for a bad team. I think he wants to be pitching in October.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, things haven't gone as well in October as he would like. I think he wants to rewrite that portion of the Wikipedia page as much as he can. So I don't expect him. Now, the bad teams aren't giving out the big contracts all that
sure.
often. So, and I don't know if the Yankees get in play here. I don't think the Yankees get in play on this one.
The Yankees only have one pitcher over 30 years of age. Everybody forgets that. Everybody says, oh, the Yankees are older. CC Sabathia is the only pitcher on their roster who's more than 30 years old.
They do need to get younger on their lineup. They only had one guy last year under the age of 31.
Correct, but now you got Bird coming, you got Ref Snyder coming, you got Gregorius. There's three quarters of the infield. Yeah. You know, I mean, you change one player a year essentially.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think they're a little gun shy. A-Rod and Teixeira, although they got good years out of them this year. I think they're a little bit gun-shy about the upper 30s players.
One year from now, they lose, I was figuring it out last night, $66 million in guaranteed contracts 1 year from now.
Get them now.
If they get a couple of younger guys in this year, next year, they might go crazy with
just before spending. We join our friends at the MLB Network, how concerned would you be about all the stuff we heard about the Royals picking stuff up, about David Price, you know, the extra breath when he was getting ready to pitch, all their advanced scouting. How concerned would you be if you were looking at offering a multi-year contract?
I think you can fix that stuff. Yeah. I think the hardest part about that stuff is not knowing you do it. I think once you know you do it, you can fix it. I mean, you know, you guys were both closer to it than I was back in the 90s. Find me somebody who doesn't think the 92 and especially the 93 Blue Jays were picking up stuff.
Part of the job, and this is okay.
Part of the job in sitting in the dugout, if you can pick something, this is not like the man in the white hat out in center field or any of that stuff. You can pick up a sign, And I think there's an excellent chance there was some validity to it. And if there is, I tip my cap to the Royals. I think the Royals earned this world championship in every respect. You've got three teams who are saying, man, I thought I had them. I thought we had them. But the Royals, they earned it.
All right, let's join our friends at the MLB Network. The AL MVP Awards being announced.
The American League MVP, Josh Donaldson, was the top choice of 23 of the 30 voters on the committee to become only the second Blue Jays player in their 38 seasons to be honored, joining 1987 winner George Bell. The other seven first-place votes went to last year's winner, the Angels' Mike Trout, who was the runner-up for the third time in 4 years.
Jack, thank you. It is
there you go, Josh Donaldson, 23 of 30. Wow, 23 of 30 first-place votes. Mike Trout got the other seven in point total, 385 to 304 for Josh Donaldson.
Mike Trout got one third-place vote, which means somebody else got a second-place vote. We can't see right now who that was. Somebody voted Trout third.
That's right.
So who got that other second place vote? Because it wasn't Kane, Machado, or Keuchel who were third, fourth, and fifth in the overall points. But
there you go.
Good for Donald. That's a little bit wider spread than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Good for him. I said that's two Blue Jay MVPs. This one won't lose his job.
I predict. I think that's a pretty safe bet. So there you go. Josh Donaldson is your 2015 American League MVP. A bigger margin, certainly, than I expected over Mike Trout.
You know, and what a lot of people, even in this market, may not realize, he finished fourth and eighth in MVP voting the last 2 years. Right. He had two great years, especially 2 years ago. Yeah. You know, it was a fantastic season for Oakland. This guy is, yes, he's a late bloomer, but it's not just this year that he's been a really great player. And I don't know if you could have predicted this, but just moving from Oakland to Toronto and from that lineup to this lineup, mm-hmm. that's going to boost your numbers a little bit.
Sure.
But he had an incredible year. And if I think of one play the whole year, it's actually a defensive play. It's during the Estrada, a perfect game attempt down in St. Petersburg. That play was unbelievable.
And that's a play that doesn't get made in the future once they put the nets up.
Yeah, which is another story. I think of the barehanded catches. That's what I think of the barehanded catches. I mean, they became almost routine at third base. And so there you go, Josh Donaldson. That's a pretty good day for the Blue Jays. Shulman's back. Shulman's back and Josh Donaldson.
Let's put things in perspective.
Well, I'm just saying. Shulman's back and Josh Donaldson gets the MVP award. You've already had an impact.
One and one.
I look forward to hearing you call game four of that World Series sweep against the Chicago Cubs next year.
Oh, man. You cannot ever play the Cubs in a World Series because now you're killing Santa Claus.
That's true.
You beat them, so what? You beat a team that hadn't won for 110 years.
Dan, thanks so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you. Looking forward to seeing more of you guys.
Welcome back. Thank you.
Thanks.
Dan Shulman, and for Dan Shulman, Dave Perkinson, John Shannon, I'm Jeff Blair. Thanks for joining us on Primetime Sports. We'll have the roundtable tomorrow. Take care, everybody.